Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice Dyer in the Magnus Protocol. As part of the Magnus Archive's 10th anniversary, Rusty Quill is hosting a special Magnus Live show at the upcoming Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield. Join co-creators Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell on the 5th of July for a new iteration of our live show, Statement Begins, where you can hear fan-favourite statements such as Anglerfish, Red Live, and gain exclusive insights into the creation and history of the show straight from the creators themselves. You can buy your tickets now, including limited numbers of meet and greet tickets, from crossedwires.live or the link in the description of this episode.
Na, noch keine Pläne fürs Wochenende? Besucht die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt in Freiburg mit euren Mädels, der Oma oder dem Knallertypen von nebenan. Wir lieben alle Jahrgänge. Entdeckt unsere interaktive Ausstellung bei der Erlebnistour mit Audioguide und einem Glas Sekt und genießt im Pavillon die ganze Welt von Rotkäppchen. Die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt, nur eine Sektlänge entfernt.
Hi everyone, Alex here. I'd just like to take a moment to thank some of our patrons.
Michael, Spiral deserves rights. Andy Lott, Daniel Williams, Heather H, Evil Angel, Vivian Starlight, Coney's Mom, KJB, Kato, Planets and Magic, Mariada, Stephanie Simon, Melissa Ponce, Olivia Pugh, Tatiana Beck, Brittany, The Paper Librarian, Kira Apple, Lena Williams, Danny.
Thank you all. We really appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them, go to www.patreon.com/rustyquill and take a look at our rewards.
Hello, and welcome to this special behind-the-scenes look at the Magnus Archives. I'm your host, Anil Gudgamur, and with me I have...
It's-a-me, Johnny.
I'm Laurie, and I produce the Magnus Archives.
Alex, I play Martin and direct and help on production.
I'm Elizabeth Moffat, and I work on the vocal cuts for Magnus.
She does the hard work. Yeah. She does the really hard work.
Thank
when
you.
Alex goes and actually, to get the door.
Thank you
I
from all
her.
Of us.
She can't respond, but...
I mean, I love our chats, Johnny. I do. It's very intimate moments.
It's great. I love having a conversation the other person just can't interact with
that
at all.
That doesn't surprise me on any level, John.
You're a writer, of course you do.
Yeah.
Today we're going to look at what I think is safe to say the most challenging episode of Season 4, Episode 158, Panopticon.
Get away from my secrets, we're not going to be telling any. Everything went fine, stop asking.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, let's delve a little bit deeper into that, shall we?
I mean, I just wrote some words, I don't know what the big deal is.
Yeah, cool, let's start with you then, Johnny. on the writing side, what were you hoping to achieve with this episode?
The two aspects of it, I think, were probably revelation and resolution. Because we knew what was going down in Season 5, and we knew that 159 was going to be the emotional climax of one very important storyline, and 160 was going to be the start of the final phase, 158 was very much our last chance to get all the other... all the sort of the disparate strands.
You can say
of...
it, put every single character in the entire series into a single episode.
Yeah. It was our last chance to take all those different storylines and put them, get all the pieces in place for Season 5, in some cases tying them off nicely, like with Gertrude or with Peter. In other cases, getting them in a position so that when we go into Season 5, we can do all sorts of interesting things with them.
I had a writing teacher once called it, which is a thing from theatre as well, readying positions. So
yes.
It's like, if you're going to do a multi-season thing, you need to make sure that everyone is in ready positions for next season.
Yes, it was getting everyone in ready positions, getting some of them dead.
dead is a ready position.
Yeah, dead is a ready position. A ready position for other people to be sad.
Nice. So that leads me on to the question, at what point did you realise that it was going to involve so many characters?
I mean, pretty much from the off, to be honest. Like when we were sitting down and planning out Season 4, we did mark 158 as the episode that was going to cause us problems. I think some of the problems it ended up causing us were not necessarily the exact ones we'd anticipated.
Some of them were unpredictable as well.
Yeah, but we certainly knew that it was going to be a big, complicated episode with a lot of different scenes and a lot of different characters and interactions to it.
Well, it's because as well, thanks to Lowry, we have a big, shiny, like, spreadsheet which changes colour. And one of the colours it can go is a nice, big, bright red when there's too many people
sorry,
in an episode.
Alex, I don't understand. It's all red. Red's the only colour it goes, I thought.
Yeah, there are other colours. They've never come up.
No, but... it's different shades of red. Right?
There's one that's almost black. That doesn't come up.
That's my favourite.
I can't take credit for that spreadsheet. That was yours, wasn't it?
It changed a lot. Yeah. I built a rudimentary little wagon and then you turn it into a Ford.
Shock horror, Alex and spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Spreadsheets solve most but not all problems. There is the problem of too many spreadsheets.
In my experience, spreadsheets highlight the problems.
In actually, bright red!
Yeah.
On the writing side, how long did it take you to write MAG-158?
Ooh, good question.
That is a good question and kind of a difficult one because the scenes got written at different points, both because of recording considerations and because of... some of them were resolutions to different storylines and so got written sort of concurrent to those storylines. Like, I think the Gertrude Elias one was actually written a good few months before a lot of the other scenes. And there was a lot of the Peter Martin scenes.
Is 158 the one where we had to do a last-minute rewrite due to a recording breaking that had Faye in it?
I think so.
Yes, I think it is. So
there
were some
scenes that had an emergency rewrite as well.
There was some rewriting when we realised that Ben and Alistair weren't going to be able to record together.
Yeah, yeah.
That led to quite a few quite significant script revisions.
Yeah, and we're going to come to that. Yeah, because, I have specific questions about
absolutely, that. Absolutely, because writing dialogue that can be recorded in isolation. It can be done and you can get good dialogue, but it's something you need to be aware of when you're writing the lines so that you don't have a lot of overlap, you don't have a lot of like direct back and forth.
Yeah. Moving on to once you have finished the script, we'll move to script editing. Alex, when Johnny passed you the script, what was your first reaction?
He loved it.
That is a very strong word, isn't it? Good word, love.
He loved it. He was like, Johnny, you've done it again.
So we have a couple of rules which do with maximum number of people in a thing. We accepted that this was going to be a big one. I cried a little bit.
With joy.
When I saw how many scenes it was. Because there's one thing to bear in mind on the production side, which is worth noting, which is, this is going to sound really weird, so bear with me. More scenes, even if it's with the same number of people, is worse than less scenes with the same or even less people. What it comes down to is, if you have multiple scenes, you have to do the audio equivalent of an establishing shot, which is where, like, people know it from TV. So you've got, like, your big... You start with the exterior, big spooky house exterior, cut to interior, and I've assembled all of the suspects here, blah, blah, blah. It's an establishing shot so that people know what they're looking at before it starts. You have to do that with audio as well. But what that means is that if you've got 10 scenes, you have to do establishing shots and you have to make sure that everything is distinct in pace and in soundscape and in tempo and so on, so that when you are bouncing them between those scenes, people know where they are. That I wasn't ready for. I was ready for there to be lots of people. I think at some point it must have flown under my radar and I went, weren't there like 10 or something?
There were 10 people.
Where we started the series with an average of 2 and then we hit 10 on that one and that one caught me by surprise. I was expecting like maybe 6, you know. I was like, that's manageable. 10's a lot. 10's a lot, so that threw me.
We had close to 10 for The Unknowing.
That's fair, but I use a few tricks and cheats in The Unknowing which made it a lot easier.
That leads me into, like, how do you go about breaking it up for recording? Something that is as large as that.
That's probably worth handing over to you, Lowry, insofar as I think for 158, you broke it up more than anyone just because you were handling the logistics at that point.
Well, I guess it's breaking it up by person. I mean, ideally you want people to travel in the minimum number of times and you want everyone in the room at the same time, which can't always happen, as I discovered on 158. I mean, I don't know that I did do much breaking down because Alex and Johnny had produced this, you know, a spreadsheet that I work from, essentially, which is breaking down all the scenes. So I just saw, right, there are 10 scenes, there are 10 people. some people are in scenes with different people, so they need to be in the room at the same time. That's a bit of a nightmare. Yeah, I don't know that.
So I'm just trying to think. With the spreadsheet, for instance, how it works is you take an episode and we split it into scenes, even if it's not like a clear transition between them. So like, Elizabeth, you'll do this all the time where it's like, we'll have statement and then the post statement is a separate scene, yeah, in inverted commas. But for that one, we just record it together. There's no reason to separate it out. Whereas for 1, 5, 8 and for anything that's got a huge number, you end up having to go scene by scene. And you also can go by version and scene. So you can have like scene one, which has three people in it. Now, let's say that those three people can't be in the same room. So you'll have scene one, and then you'll have version one, which is with this person, version two, which might be with these two people, and version three, which is with this person. So you've got scene one, version one, two, three. But then you have takes within versions. So you have scene one, version two, take two. Scene one, version three, take two. And then you can find versions, and you pick the best take from each version, you combine the versions, and then you have a scene. And then you combine the scenes into other scenes, and you have an episode.
Sorry, I wasn't listening. Could you say that again?
So the vocal clapperboard, basically.
Honestly, yeah. People laughed when Lydia playing Melanie did the clap when she was going to do a recording and so on. That's what we literally do. Like, you literally do markers on tapes and so on. But I think Elizabeth would agree that the process of combining all of those is trivial, requires almost no time investment whatsoever, and is almost automated by this point, really.
Well, I mean, for episode 158, it ended up being 4 hours and 8 minutes of recording. So
I didn't know that metric.
That's more than how much recording sessions. Some of those
that's
were
horrendous.
Some of those were the same scene, but you had one, like, not Sasha, yeah, I think was...
yeah, she was recorded.
She was
in
recorded
isolation.
Separately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then obviously we had Ben recorded in isolation and all of those combined. So in the end it was like, yeah, 4 hours, because I just did a quick check. And then, of course, you're like, well, for those 4 hours, 8 minutes, you've also got at least two people in each scene, on each record. So there's probably like maybe 11, 12 hours worth of actual...
Yeah, yeah.
I did prepare
for
myself.
For a half an hour episode.
Yeah.
See, the thing to bear in mind as well, just because from production experience on other stuff, this is going to sound peculiar. Like, for anyone who's like doing this professionally, they're going to go, that's actually a decent like ratio of raw to thingy. But what it is the reason that we as a company function is that we've pared processes down as much as we can and we keep shaving it and trying to make it more efficient. So bizarrely, for like... let's say for a radio play, or if you were doing TV, for instance, that not maybe not live broadcast, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, the ratio, that's not a...
If you're doing 1 to 4, I think in film, it's considered pretty good.
Film, I think, if last time I checked, average is at 1 to 10.
Yeah.
1 to 4 is like, yeah, you're doing a good job. You're a good director if you're managing 1 to 4. This is significantly higher than ours, but it's also worth bearing in mind this is audio only. We have like 140 episodes under the belt in terms of infrastructure. So yeah, going up to that, that's what, a factor of 10 higher than we would normally have relative to the... It's hard to say.
I mean, I guess the average episode where it was like just a Johnny episode would be maybe 40 minutes worth of recording.
Yeah, that sounds
well,
about
right. Well, yeah, because the 40... statements...
They're the secret, they're the trick.
I mean, like, the statements, you get maybe 10 minutes more than you'll actually get, because it's generally one storytelling take with sections repeated if I've flubbed up a word or that sort of thing. I think most dialogue scenes we generally do maybe four takes if we're struggling.
Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, as a rule, Magnus is actually bizarrely, like, surprisingly efficient. The wastage isn't that high, but...
I mean, obviously that time includes you guys chatting at the start, you guys chatting
at the
end.
We give you nothing but pure gold.
Like going down to get the door because the doorbell's gone.
Never arrange multiple shows to record on the same day. Yes, it seems better on paper, but it isn't. It just isn't.
Bing bong.
Yeah, don't.
Bing bong.
We've removed the doorbell today. It's literally not going to ring.
Well, it does mean you get quite happy, nice little outtakes.
Yeah. I have like a small collection of just doorbell noises. Like, you would be surprised what I've stored, like in a folder of like things that are for me.
I'm happy to let it be known to the public. There is a breath library that's been building. Yeah. We have a breath library for what's happening. Well, this person's in the scene, but they're not speaking, but we need them to feel in the scene. We'll just use some of Johnny, breath 7. Actually, you know what? This feels more like a breath 6.
Oh, no, okay, that was actually a bit much.
But genuinely, we do have, like, stock breath that's built up organically.
That's fairly natural because room tone is something that is very consistently needed and used in audio and video productions.
Which is why it's a benefit. So we actually record in an unusual room, which is normally when you're recording vocal work, you don't need this extreme, like in terms of soundproofing and baffling and so on, because you end up in something called like a null space or like a like dead space.
I'll be honest, I haven't been in that many recording studios that have as many cold iron glyphs embedded into the walls.
It helps with the resonance mainly.
Right.
Ethereal resonance specifically.
Sure.
But so if you're doing like corporate voiceovers, yeah, you'll be in a null room, you know, like come to Canada, we've got bears, I don't know. But like you put that in a null room. But when you're recording like audio drama and scenes, it normally needs to sound like it's in a room, shocker. So as a result, you just use standard soundproofing, which is a little bit, whereas we've built this to be as dead as it can be because we're bouncing around between locations and stuff. But it does mean that we add artificial room tone.
Plus, you used to have Mike as a character.
So, oh, my God.
Like, I mean, that guy could fill an auditorium without anything else in it.
Yeah,
sandbags
are a valid strategy to deal with, Mike. Much like an enormous flood, a sandbag is a good way to deal with that problem.
How do you apply a sandbag to deal with Mike?
You just whack him with it.
Do you want the genuine answer? You get him to hold it. It absorbs the chest resonance so it doesn't just go boom.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a reason that when we were recording off single mic and stuff, he used to stand at the back of the single file.
Amazing.
So that all of the fleshy meat sacks could absorb his resonance space.
I still remember just lining up in that corridor. That was, what was it? There was you, then it was me, then
there were six of us, I remember that.
What was that for?
This is like in the early days where we had to do a finale with multiple people, like season one?
Yeah, I think it was you, then me, then Eve, then...
Season one, then.
No, it was season two. We were in the disco flat.
You're right, we were in disco flat.
That would be just before Brutal Sounds of...
Yes,
extended sounds of Brutal Pipe Murder.
Actually,
it was the era of getting my mother to sit on a chair in a corridor under a disco light.
Yeah, I remember. So let's run through the list then. Just I realise I'm going completely off-piste here, but you know it's what I do.
Don't worry.
Let's see. So we have setup one: a clothes horse with some blankets on the sofa in the flat that I was a lodger.
Asbestos flat.
No, it's way pre-asbestos. So this is clothes yurt in James Ross's flat.
Oh, God, yes.
Because he let me start Rusty Cool Gaming in there, and the first episodes of Magnus were recorded there.
Yes, I'd forgotten that.
From there, we migrated to asbestos flat.
In asbestos flat.
Which was sofa yurt in asbestos
which
flat.
Which was really weird, because it was literally 1 minute's walk away from where I had been living a year before.
But we thought we'd make wait until
and we just sort of missed it, yeah.
Then Asbestos Gate happened, where everything that I owned was destroyed. So, after the chaos, we bounced to another place called Twickenham. Twickenham Road, which was sort of near, but not the same place. So then we were recording there, where I literally bought furniture specifically because it was more useful to record with at that point.
That was where we piled, what, 5 duvets on Lottie?
That was where
she could scream at midnight.
Yeah, that's where we did screaming until 4 a.m. and none of the neighbours... Oh, they heard, they just...
Didn't care.
Then after that one, we bounced...
East London.
Yep. Then after that one, we had to bounce to... That's Disco Corridor.
Yep.
Disco Corridor, because Martin, our head of tech, we found a corridor that he had in his flat and I was like, yeah, I can make this work with some
blankets. It was nice. It was on the 13th floor.
So up on the 13th floor, which was away from traffic, nice. Although wind, big problem. Mm. Martin thought it'd be hilarious if he replaced the light bulb where we were recording with a disco light bulb. So if you turn the light on while you're recording, it was full like...
It just sort of slowly, sadly rotated.
It was a good disco ball.
It was lovely.
Then we migrated from Disco Corridor to here.
It was
here. Pre-studio here.
Oh, when you just pinned
stapled a bunch of sleeping bags to a wall. And then we...
My poor father staring into the sleeping bag wall.
He took such a leap of faith. He turned up when it was still sleeping bag wall. It wasn't even corridor where, like, your mum was like, I understand what's happening here. That's fine. This is a temporary... Whereas your dad was like, so this is your permanent setup? I was like, yeah. Yeah, it is. Put this sleeping bag on.
Okay. Let's bring this back to MAG 158 in specific. Laurie, when Alex told you what the episode was going to require, what were your thoughts?
Well, I don't remember Alex telling me. I just remember looking at the spreadsheet and going, there are 10 scenes and 10 people who all live scattered across the country. Everyone's in London.
Yeah, because it's the cast. It's that episode happens to have all of the most far-flung people all in the same episode.
Yep.
Faye, Cambridge, Ian's down from...
Manchester,
yeah.
Ben's coming up from Brighton, though that isn't that big a thing.
Yeah, we've got that one down to a final.
Eve was, I forget where, but it certainly wasn't London at that point.
She was away at that point.
Alistair in Reading, your mum.
Oh, yeah, Bournemouth.
No one was in London!
No one. And do you know what else? But the big thing for me, so I had only been producing Magnus for, I think, 3 months.
Oh, yeah, this was horrendous.
You came mid-season, which I cannot imagine how dreadful that was.
Because you came in to cover the previous producer who had
I will
to
say,
leave,
yeah, that was Story Sylvester, who did a fantastic job.
Oh, she was great.
She basically left to pursue other projects. More power to her. And it was hilarious because I know for a fact that Story was like, we've got this, it's all going to be fine. And then it was like, I'm going to have to move on. At which point it was like, Story said that we have this. Little did I think I should probably make sure that that is passed to Lowry in some way. So I need to put this set the record straight. Story was wonderful, and all of the reasons for any difficulty transfer was me. Well, this was all me.
I don't think there was a bit of a gap between her leaving and me starting as well, I think.
Yeah, because that's my point is I had to produce it for a while.
Yeah.
And that's when problems start. Yeah.
Just because you have so much on, right?
Yeah, that's it.
I remember there was a phone call. I don't remember why, but I was in Seven Dials at the time. I was literally sitting on the little middle of the little roundabout when you were talking. and we were chatting, and this was the conversation where we were like, "Oh, okay, well, we'll have to do a bunch of it like recording separately. Like this is a
who's that, me and you?"
Yeah, this was the conversation where it's like, "Okay, well, for this episode, we're suspending our policy of always try to have people in the same room." It was a lovely conversation. You're like, no, I have had a little cry. It's all right.
That's probably true. The thing that really put a spanner, well, there were two things that put a big spanner in the works that I did not foresee was Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh, God.
So I looked at this and we, according to another spreadsheet, we needed to have the recording done by mid-September. And this was July at the time. So I was emailing people, hey, can you come in? We've got some scenes for you. Lovely. And of course, so many of the guests were in Edinburgh. So that took all of August out. So I was like, okay, that's fine. We can do this.
It is worth explaining. So for US listeners,
oh, yeah, of course.
There's the... Is it formally International Edinburgh Festival now?
Okay, so there's a whole bunch of festivals at the same time. The Edinburgh International Festival is one of them. Mm. The Fringe is a separate thing. There was the Edinburgh Film Festival at the on at the same time for a few years.
Now,
that's
it?
Now shifted.
But there's the Book Festival.
The tattoo.
Yeah.
The tattoo's on, so you actually get Americans come over for the tattoo, for example. And they're like, what the hell else is going on? Oh, a huge comedy festival.
So long story short, there's a massive, massive, massive festival that happens in Edinburgh. I say
all
one,
August.
It's like eight of them, but it uses up a whole month. But there's a thing in the UK, which is that pretty much everyone in the arts will be in there in some capacity.
Mm.
And as a side effect, it means that almost all things get made around that month.
Yeah. Yeah.
It warps the production calendar for everything.
Like the last couple of years are the first couple of years in like 10 years I haven't been up there doing something like with either Mechanisms or some other project.
I only stopped once the company was running.
Yeah. I miss it a bit.
But you must enjoy your money, though, because the problem about the Edinburgh Fringe is whoever goes up there, regardless of what you're
actually,
doing,
actually,
attending
we,
or performing,
with,
you're losing money.
With Mechanisms, we did all right, actually. We were a free show, but we sold CDs afterwards as like, a fiver will also get a CD. So a lot of people were like, oh, well, it was free to come in, so we'll just buy a CD. So we actually did all right.
No, I don't miss it. I would mostly be up in Edinburgh with, caveat here, it would be with like six shows or something, but it's because I'd be creative director on one, I'd be resident director on another, which is where you just make sure that the show doesn't fall apart, but you didn't build the thing.
To be fair, I did pitch you Magnus at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh yeah, like I'm eventually going to have to go back, but... I'm not hugely keen, if I'm honest. Like,
I want to do the Fringe.
Go there doing something and be aware that it's not If you enjoy really intense kind of going a little unstable across the course of a month because you're exhausted and stressed and really busy all the time, if you enjoy that sort of thing, it's amazing. If you don't, it's very bad.
But you don't have to do the whole month, though.
No, that's true.
No, a lot of folks just do a week or two these days.
Like I realise we're going off on one again. I would say as a caveat, it depends whether it is a full professional business thing for you or not. If it's a full professional, like this is your livelihood, you've got to do at least 3 shows a day to even begin looking at covering costs. Plus, you then want to have a side gig. So for me, it was teching other shows and things like that. But it does mean that you are genuinely working 12 to 13 hours a day, like hard work as well, not soft work.
I would hate to do it in any sort of professional capacity.
It's not great.
It was great, sort of the 7-8 of us crammed into a flat going. Yeah,
like the self-contained project where that's your thing, you do it and you leave. I've done before a while ago, was great. When it's like, this is me doing my networking for an entire year in a single month at the same time as doing all of this, blah. But to circle it back round, there's a reason why the entirety of August is just dead. Yeah. Just dead every year.
Yeah, and it's very hard to book people for August. Yeah, so the second thing that kind of put a spanner in our works was someone very, very selfishly getting married at the end of September.
What
a jerk.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that, of course, takes the studio out of play for weeks.
I mean, no, but that would only be the case if whoever was getting married lived in the house with the studio.
Which would be madness, by the way, because London real estate is fractionally like zero. Like, rent is zero in London. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so that doesn't make any sense.
Maybe I was mistaken and it was all unnecessary.
Or if, like, half the company weren't going to said wedding.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it was quite challenging to get everyone in the same room. And in fact, we didn't get everyone in the same room.
We did. It was more of a tent, but everyone was in the same room.
All right.
So how do you go about organising a cast recording of that scale?
Jeez.
Doodle polls.
Good start.
Yeah. Actually, I looked back on my emails before coming here just because I wanted to get some dates right. And the very first, I very naively just sent out emails and then like 3 or 4 emails later.
Oh, sweet summer child.
Quite down the chain. I was like, okay, here's a doodle poll. Please just put your availability in because... Yeah, I remember getting that back and you and Ben in particular, Alex, just looking at it and being like, there is no day. There is not a single day both of you can be in the studio together.
There were like 50 options or something. Because one of the benefits is having our own studio comes with a couple of advantages. And one of which is it makes the flexibility plausible. The stuff that we make would physically not be possible if we didn't do our own studio. Like, categorically, it's just completely out the window.
And we couldn't utilise a commercial studio on the basis that we record.
Well, no, because even things like, if someone's late for a recording, great, your recording's shot. Which is fine when you don't release the thing until the entire thing's recorded and you have a 16-month production window. We don't. We're making way too much content for that to be a thing, so you have to have your own. But even then, so that means that on a doodle poll that was like, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m, 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Like, there were 10 options per day, 40 days, and you're like, no.
And of course, that makes it even worse when you think about the fact that Alex has to be here for the recording to happen because he runs the studio. So
you won't be able to get in.
Well, that for us also.
He's got Casper.
He is a lazy cat.
Why haven't you trained him yet?
He does not understand compression, and I don't know why.
Typical.
No matter how many times you drill it into him, here's the kibble.
I'm like, look, if you balance your EQs, you get a dreamy. He just steals the bag and runs.
Oh, he's a good cat.
To be fair, he's quite good on narrative structure now. I've been taking him through... Been taking them through some basic
Alex,
scripting
looking
lessons.
At this draft. I really think that we should do maybe 6 scenes for this. 5. Fine, 3.
So is Casper going to get a co-writing credit on season 5 then?
I mean, maybe.
Are you ready for the real dark secret? The cat that's in Magnus Archives isn't Casper.
I think fans know that by now, but still, there may be new people who aren't
Casper's
aware.
Casper's not actually that vocal.
He's not.
He just sort of silently glides Judges. Up. And then you're like, oh, hello, Casper. And then he's like... embrace me. And you're like, yeah, okay.
Sure.
So aside from the scheduling, were there any other kinds of difficulties that you ran into?
Yeah, honestly, this was the first show of this scale that I had produced because I'd come from gaming, which, because it has been running for so long and is so regular in its recording schedule, it's actually, it's not... I mean, you need a producer, but it's not... It doesn't keep changing, exactly. Yeah. As you said, it's stable.
It's built to be as boring to produce as possible.
Yeah, so then coming into Magnus, and, you know, I'd never produced something... I mean, gaming is improv, so I'd never had to think about the fact that I've booked this recording. I have to tell Johnny to write that script. You know, that was a thing where I had, oh no. And then I called to Johnny, please tell me you've written this episode.
Occasionally there has been Laurie, I've finished up this script, and it's been like, oh, actually, that's not the one we're recording next. We need these two episodes.
It was a steep learning curve, okay?
it's all right. To be honest, I've said it before, I'm a bit of a deadline writer, so I'm quite happy being like, okay, two episodes in 2 days. Yeah, sure, that's fine. Leaves me the rest of the week to not do anything.
Why would you tell me that? Because now I'm just going to constantly be like, so we're recording this tomorrow, Johnny?
I mean, if you do, I'll get it written. I won't be good in the recording, because I'll be like, yes.
So how long did it actually take to record all the different scenes?
I don't think I'm the one to answer that. I don't know.
So we were talking from raw audio, which was 4 hours and...
4 hours.
8 minutes.
Or 8 minutes of sessions.
Time in a recording studio. Time span.
Like from the day the first scene was recorded to the day the
last. Oh, right.
How,
so
how long?
The
how
last, long? The last one. Yeah, the last one was on the 6th of September.
Because there was also...
When did the episode drop?
It was edited by the 21st of September.
Yeah, it was. Elizabeth has never missed a deadline.
I absolutely missed them one day late most of the time.
But I don't notice because I don't check till the day after that.
Because I assume the producer has put that into their schedule already.
Yeah, they have.
I should have looked this up before I came on mic. But so Mag 160 was 31st of October. Well, 30th because we release a day early for the early access beta. Yeah. So 2 weeks
14th,
before that.
14th of October.
Yeah, so mid-October was the episode drop. And we'll talk about some of the other problems on that side in a bit. But
including post. How did we do this?
I mean, I came here prepared to look Elizabeth in the eye and say, I'm so sorry I couldn't get everyone in the room at the same time. I tried so hard.
I would genuinely say, from first scene of that episode being recorded to last scene, more than a month.
Oh, definitely.
Maybe pushing two.
Yeah, because I think the Gertrude Elias scene was recorded quite separately to everything else as well.
No, they weren't, but I don't think they were recorded together, right?
No, really? I think
Gertrude and Elias.
Were they?
Because they were the hardest of that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't gel, did they?
Oh, did they not?
That when I was trying to match it, like with other ones, like with, you know, the Martin, Peter, Elias, I had the overlap of the people being in the room together who were in the room together.
Sure.
And then I could work with that, and that had that natural flow.
Oh, so, was this the only one where it was completely...
Yeah, it was two separate ones. And I really found it hard to find whether an overlap would work or... Because when you're editing it, I sort of visualize it, right? Yep. I've got them in a room and I might think about, like, are they going to pace? You know, I think of it almost like television or film, right?
You stop people from teleporting across the room in terms of timing.
Yeah. You've got imaginary blocking that you're doing,
I found that scene the hardest by far. That's one that I spent way more time on than you'd expect compared to the other scenes. And especially, I think that end bit where Gertrude gets shot and the takes that I had, and it was written in the script, you know, like in the words, that she's shocked, but she's not. Mm.
Yeah.
But she didn't give any breaths with it.
Oh, no.
And having fallen, like, in my experience, when you fall down the stairs or something happens, which is a bit of a shock to your body, you take very short, shallow breaths. So I built in some of that breath works. But then afterwards, when I noticed that the scripted three shots didn't occur when I listened to the episode, I was like, maybe that's my fault. Maybe if, like,
I was gonna say, had there been three shots.
So, I don't know.
Two things happened there. One was that is an element but not your fault, insofar as, like, the timings for three didn't work. Like, they just didn't.
For three shots?
Yeah. The second thing is, because we were so up against it, I think mentally I made a mental note of what I'll do is I'll do one shot and then I'll have him say pity and then just do two more shots after she's on the ground and then I can just dodge the timing thing. Then didn't. That concludes the explanation for that.
I do remember listening to it back and going, where's the other shots?
Yeah,
I read the script.
And I've been giving this a lot of thought. The workaround I had was, to do the two shots after the fact and be like, yeah, it'd be fine. Didn't happen, did it?
Yeah, post was a little bit stressful.
I don't know what you mean. It was flawless.
Okay. So moving on to some questions about the directing. Given all the issues with the recordings being so split up like that, how smoothly would you say that the actual recordings went?
Intense stares at Alex.
It's a big, complicated question because the variation is huge. So once you realise that a recording session is one scene, one version. So you can do multiple takes in a single recording session, but you can only do one version per session. You can't do two versions in the same session, otherwise you just have them in the same room at the same time. So what that means is, like, between recording sessions there's huge variation. I would say that, generally speaking, things were better than they would have been if we'd have done them earlier, because a lot of people got used to some of the shortcuts and tricks that we use. So, for instance, early days doing any kind of combat, so like the Daisy Basira and the running and blah, 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 was rough. People didn't know what worked. People didn't really know what you were getting at. I'm going to make a bit of an elaborate comparison, but bear with me on this journey. I'm not as pompous as this will initially sound.
Okay.
Any of you know about, like, the director who worked on the Mad Max remakes?
George Miller?
I believe so, but I don't know.
Like Fury Road?
Yeah, well,
no,
Fury
Road. It's not, they're not remakes. It's the same guy who did the original Mad Max.
Sorry, reboot is what
I mean.
Yeah. He's done all of them, I think.
I know that he, like, when he's done it, like, there's one square that you can basically, all the action happens in.
Yes. So, I am not comparing myself to that director. Let's put that to bed. What I am saying, though, is that he was well known, like, on record, especially for the newer one, as basically the cast didn't get what he was getting at. And a couple of them openly, publicly confessed afterwards. They were like, I was a bit of an arse. Like, did not get what you were getting at. I totally see it now. It's fine. Combat in the early days of Magnus was a lot like that, where people were like, don't really know what's
taking
happening
it a lot
here.
On trust.
Is that what... I don't know what you want. Yeah. A lot of me saying, right, can you grab yourself and shake? And people look at me like I'm insane. Like, I'm completely lost the plot. It's like, no, trust me on this. But as time has gone on, people have learned these tricks and they've heard the end result and gone, oh, okay, so that makes you do this and that's the fix, that da da da. So that went a lot easier. That said, there were a few issues, which was time compression was a huge problem, which is that a recording session can be compressed to a point and then no more, where it's just a case of, this was probably the episode most where at the end of a recording session I would just contact Lurie and go, yeah, Lurie, we were meant to do three scenes, two versions. We have done two scenes, two versions. And it's not a case of, okay, can we accelerate, guys? Because if you accelerate, you're ruining the take.
The scenes change.
The scene is garbage. The take is garbage. Do it again.
Yeah.
So if you go quick, you're doing more takes, so it actually takes longer than if you just cut it off. What that means is you would book a recording for, let's get three scenes done today. And you will get one scene done today and go, cool, we need an emergency recording to pick it up. And then you do the emergency recording and something comes up and you only do one scene, not the other two. So you need another recording. So this is the one where within room, everyone was very professional. Things were fine. I think there was one bit towards the end where I started to lose my temper a little bit, which was the recordings had broken.
Was this the episode where Alistair's dialogue vanished?
No, yes. No, that was 159, wasn't it?
I forget. It might have been 158.
I think we had him in, because we had him doing 158 and 159.
But there was one didn't lose my temper at performers, but I did lay down the law in a way I don't normally do, which is, all conversation that is not recorded, stop. Now, stop, stop, stop talking. No, now. If we don't record this within the next 10 minutes, the episode will not drop. Shush, stop. I don't normally operate like that. So that was a bit of a weird one. But for the rest, mostly people started to be aware that we were up against it. And with that comes an element of people don't mess around. And that's not me sort of casting aspersions. It's just that when you're up against it, people tend to put their game face on, you know?
Also, to be honest, Alex, you are a good director and you inspire a certain degree of loyalty. So most people are willing to, like, really go to bat to record an episode when they need to.
It is better to be feared than loved and to convince everyone to say that you are loved on audio.
Yes.
I didn't say loved.
I am a delight.
We're back into strong adjectives here. So actually on the directing side as well, did you learn anything from The Unknowing at the end of season 3 that was useful for...
no! I learned a lot in The Unknowing, mainly in what you can get away with. None of which was applicable, which is why 158 was a headache. So for The Unknowing, I knew straight out the gate, hang on. Number one, I have creepy circus music in the can. Wasn't originally creepy circus music. It was nice circus music that we then made creepy. fantastic. But then with the unknowing, this is something that I genuinely have had, and you can corroborate this, Johnny. We have had sit-down meetings where I've gone, right, it's time to learn what is easy to edit and what's hard to edit, what's easy to record and not.
I was talking about season 5 with you a while back, and I was like, oh, this is going to be really tough because there's like loads of proper hellscapes in this. This is a transformed world. A lot of episodes are going to have like strong unknowing vibes. Yeah, yeah. And you were like, oh, no, that's fine.
That's fine.
That's fine. Because 158, the difficulty was, it was all in the real world.
Yeah.
So everything had to sound real. And what Alex has drilled into me over and over again, mainly verbally, sometimes physically, is that things that people don't know what they should sound like because they are otherworldly are a hell of a lot easier to soundscape than things that people... Like, people know what running through a corridor in a basement should sound like.
And the error margin is tiny.
People know what it sounds like when a door gets kicked in.
Even if it's not true, it's that classic thing that a punch
We're trained to recognise.
We've seen enough films and such.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Vehicles in space make noise.
And you've also got to take into account that some things you don't need it to sound realistic. You need to figure out what brand of non-realistic people will correctly interpret.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, no, that might not be how a door actually sounds when it gets kicked in, but that is the not. But you need to figure out which of the noises that people will be like, that's what's happening.
Gunshots are a good example of that. The secret with the secret of doing a good gunshot on audio is that you need to really, really compress the tail so that the initial bang in a real gunshot, an actual waveform, you just see a line. It just goes bang, pops every mic, and then there's no other sound. So the way that you do audio gunshots, as an example, is they're not real. What you do is you compress the heck out of it so you hear lots of the tail, but the initial bang is quite quiet. But that's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. So for the unknowing, you just put a bunch of creepy music underneath, which is the only time we've done scene transitions where the music swells and comes down, because it's allowed, because the unknowing's kind of theatrical, and blah, blah, blah.
Also, one thing, was it you? It might have been you that told me this, but apparently when in films they're filming people like being on fire, like in an action movie or something like that, they never direct them to act as if they're being on fire because it is categorically too disturbing because they scream.
Oh, I didn't
so
know
they,
that.
What they tell them is, imagine you've got a swarm of bees on you.
Yeah, that's what they look like.
Because
that's like
the that apparently gets the level where like,
oh my goodness,
we can watch somebody being on fire and being like, oof, they're on fire, without being like, oh my god.
So that's why they have the stagger, which I've known like that. So I didn't know that isn't me that's telling
you. Because can you imagine with someone with their arms down, running on fire would be just horrifying.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And actually, like, don't you tighten up? You really rapidly.
I mean, like, I don't actually.
Heading out of my knowledge.
I mean, I've never stuck around to watch.
I know how to treat the issue. I don't know how
to watch. I like to watch, don't
you? Oh, God.
And before we get any creepier.
So to circle to 158, although we learnt a lot in the unknowing, the issue with 158 is they are all knowable spaces. So season 5 is grand. It's just like, oh, you know what? I need the sound of 1,000 people screaming. It's like, trivial. Come on.
Are we heading into spoiler territory here?
A good example. Okay, here you go. The anglerfish is a baby slowed down 60 times, I think, and then with reverb and a bass boost added to it. It's just a baby going... Blah, 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 blah. Easy. Yeah. No one knows what anglerfish sounds like. No one cares. But the ultimate evil, which I have been hating, is transitions from one space to another. Someone is in the archivist's office, opens a door, steps out into a corridor. That's hours of work. That is absolutely hours of work to get that right. And C158 is full of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know people love the phrase chocker. It's chocker with stuff that sounds like, oh, cool. And it's like, cool, that door, that's 3 hours of work. Oh, no. What happened? Someone dropped their gun. Clock in 2 more hours of post. Oh. It's just because everything's knowable. Whereas all of the finales up to then have been sufficiently weird.
It's like, I was worried about the lonely. I was like, Alex, are you going to be okay?
Lonely was easy.
And you're like, yeah, it's just going to be like a beach sound, and then I'm going to do a bunch of audio effects on it.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Lonely was easy because I was just like, cool, it's going to be in one space. That's the only rule. As long as it's in one space, we can get this out real quick.
I actually have a question, and it's not 158. So it's 159, and it's the only episode where we've got panning of audio.
Technically not true. There's a small amount in the unknowing.
Oh, is there? And I was like, ooh. Alex.
Well,
that's
so, yeah,
a choice.
Okay,
I,
yeah, there's
I wasn't expecting it.
The rule that I have always had, which has been unspoken and is a house style rule, but I've never had to teach anyone because I did the soundscapes. People are going to build theories on this now I think about it. So the tape sounds are stereo. All of the vocals are mono. So they are not pan.
Because like the actual tape recorder.
So bear with me. Yeah. Bear with me.
An actual tape recorder would record in mono. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So an actual tape recorder would record in mono. So everything's in mono, meaning that it doesn't have any pan. It's just flat down the level. Everything's centered in. If you were wearing headphones, it's centered in the middle of your head.
Yep.
Okay. The tape recorder is in stereo.
Juicy bit.
Deduce from that what you will. All of the effects are in mono as well. So like someone dropping a gun, someone going through a door, whatever. Anything that's full post-ritual, so in like The Unknowing, that was full ritual style.
Yeah.
All of the music, because it's semi-diegetic, meaning that, so diegetic and non-diegetic. Diegetic means in scene, as in like if someone's listening to a radio in a car and it's on the TV,
it's cryptodiegetic.
If it is non-diegetic, it's like a film score where you know the audience can't hear it, the characters can't hear it.
Yeah.
What, and then you have on top of?
No, I'm trying to think of like Diegeldrich? No, I'm trying to...
Diegeldrich is not bad, actually.
It's pretty bad.
So semi-diegetic is the one where it's like a character is driving down the road listening to the radio and then the music swells until it's the soundtrack.
Right.
Okay. So The Unknowing has semi-diegetic, where they're hearing music, but it's actually stereo and it's done the way that Magnus music is, and the Magnus music has always been non-diegetic, so that one bled there. This is on the sort of directorial waffle thing. For 160, because of that, I started to mess around with making it become panned because they're in a post-ritual scenario. So it should have been beginning to pan a little bit at the start of the episode, and then towards the end it will have gone full, like, panning and stereo.
Mm. Right.
So we mentioned in passing that Ben and Alistair were not in the room together to record their lines. What are the challenges that come with directing a scene like that?
Honestly, directing is not as bad as you might think. What it just consists of is having an idea for what the scene is in your head and making extra effort to make things match that. So you are the meeting place between these two recordings. If you have all the time in the world, what you do is you play that recording for the next person who comes in so that they have a sense of pacing and blah, 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 blah. We did do that, in fairness, for one of the pairings, but we couldn't for the other because the turnaround was too tight. I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been the Gertrude Benn one where they had to do it in complete isolation from one another. So in that one, what you have to do is go tell one person, okay, this is the way the scene should be, and then get the other person to home in on that. However, I am going to be honest and say that the art isn't in the directing in that. It's just not. It's in the editing. Mm. It's in the vocal edit specifically.
Okay.
The directing is just...
Again!
Basically, could you do that better? Better how? Better in this specific way? I'll try. Rinse, repeat.
Sure.
The vocal edit is one where it's taking something that's a little bit broken and making it not.
I think what you're really hoping when you get the files is that the energy between them is the same. Because I think when you've got someone beside you, you're feeding back the same amount of energy they have. Mm. The one scene which I've edited where I was like, oh God, this is completely mismatched, was when Mel she's angry at Johnny. This was after the surgery, and she comes to yell at him.
When he goes to see her.
And I was like, shit, because like you were... much lower energy, and she is like, you know,
I'm gonna get you.
Yeah, like she's really, really high, and so
it
was difficult. And
I didn't know about this one. I think did I record this first, or did she?
This is end of 157. I think it's around that time.
It would be earlier than that.
Yeah,
because,
it would be
pre-therapy, Melanie.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about
when he goes to see her. Where he's like, I'm sorry. Jordan. And she's like, get away from me.
Oh, that post-surgery, right.
But yeah, I remember because that was a thing. And I was really impressed again with you, Elizabeth, because the energy levels were
I remember looking at the script, and sometimes you do it with the script. So when I get the edit, so I'll download the script and I get some editing notes from Alex, which will have some time codes for when things happen.
Not very good notes, I'll add.
Well, depends whether you're in a scene or not.
That's really true.
So obviously I go by the script. I look for if there's going to be any noises that I'm not expecting. Because sometimes you'll listen through and you're like,
Thanks for that, Johnny.
Just a quick demonstration.
Yeah, and the editor, thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No problem. It's fine. Elizabeth will take care of it.
She's great.
Yeah, I can only laugh so much about that.
I know, right? It's getting old, huh?
You know, so you're looking for maybe unexpected things that if you're just listening to people talking, you might just not expect that they're there. Yeah. Unless there's a specific reaction to it and you're like, oh, it's a gun. And you're like, okay, so you gotta know what's happened.
Oh, no, those are a nightmare.
But sometimes what you do need to do is, in that case, I played with the timing of your lines. So what you'd scripted, I moved it so that it was more spread out with hers. So you're trying to interrupt her a bit more rather than... also add in a bit more like of your ums and ahs from other bits so that you're like...
I mean,
like,
it came out sounding good.
You know, just to give you that sort of sense, like you're trying to get to her while she's in the middle of the, you know, I'll say a rant, but while she's in the middle
came
of this high
really
energy.
Well. Yeah. Came out really, really well. Because that's what we call, as an arbitrary phrase, it's not a real thing, like Franken-voicing. Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like Franken-voicing is where you take something that someone said and you're like, this doesn't work. We'll chop it up and make it work and put it back together like a Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
Well, a Frankenstein's monster before people complain. But yeah, that was really
his name
well done.
Was Adam Frankenstein. He was, I mean, you know, he was the son of Victor Frankenstein. It works. He's still Frankenstein.
We will come back to the thing, but I've got one last question for Alex on the directing side. How many takes were needed for the Elias laugh?
I don't want to admit this. He got it on the first take and we did two more just in case.
He didn't quite...
Oh, it was his second take.
No, look, because he did a really good laugh, but I remember quite distinctly that there wasn't any relief in the laugh. It was all amusement. And so, like, once we explained what the laugh was, because he didn't... Because at the time...
Oh, no, yeah,
because the thing
fair,
is, he didn't
fair.
Actually know what was going to happen in 160. So we had to explain, no, this is... You've just nailed this. You have... This is the laugh of my plan is now actually basically complete.
Then it can't
have been all
more
worked.
Than take two, though.
No, like, as soon as we explained to him what the laugh actually was, he just did it.
Which is really annoying, by the way. His ego doesn't need that. And it's also annoying because villain...
He's just won an award.
Yeah, I know. Villain laughs traditionally are terrible. Like, no one can do villain laughs. Everyone thinks they can. That's what it is. Everyone thinks they've got the villain laugh, and no one does. And he happens to have it.
To have.
Which
him,
is fine.
Him and Gertrude.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Amazing. In fairness, Johnny's mom has a fabulous cackle and was still disappointed because the one that made it into bloopers isn't the full cackle. That was a little, like, little side cackle.
A teaser.
And that wasn't a 15-seconder, which I have heard. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A 15-seconder at the end of it. You're not bored.
You know they're going to ask for that now.
I don't have it. Like it's not recorded.
Oh,
there is no recording of a 15-second cackle, which I know that your mum is capable of.
It's fine.
Of doing.
You're overselling it.
I disagree.
I mean, bring it back for season 5. I want to.
We'll just see. The cackle.
We'll see.
I'm just saying we could record the cackle if we slowed it down like 50 times, put some bass in there. That's a hellscape.
Turn it into an EDM. So moving on to the editing, we've touched on this throughout, but a lot of the comments from the fans have been how good the editing and the soundscaping on this episode were, which obviously starts with the vocal cut. You've touched on a bit about the editing notes that Alex has given you. What were your thoughts when you saw those?
I remember I did have a glance back, and I remember there was a piece in red which is like, just ignore this bit. It's just here for safety, which I duly ignored in the editing notes. And the word strap in was also...
Oh, yeah, I did. I did write strap in at one point. It's because there was like, wasn't there one version that was like, so this is take 16? And there was one where it just went on and on and on.
I think that was when the hunters burst in.
Yeah.
There were a lot of takes of that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There were a lot of different... Because that was one where we did have everyone in the room. So there were 5 people in the room and, like, there were just a lot of takes, a lot of different energy levels, a lot of trying it different ways.
You are welcome that they were all there, by the way.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. Like, especially because that was both Ian and Faye, who are two of the harder ones to coordinate with travel.
Mm. I mean, that was probably more luck than anything else.
So basically, I'd just come back from a really great holiday.
Yes! Oh, yes!
I had gone to the Pacific Islands, swum with humpback whales, gone back to New Zealand, had a great birthday, been with my family.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
And I was messaging you while you were away, as I like,
would you be able to do these
minutes?
Yeah, sure, right.
I'm feeling real chill. That'd be good.
I was able to listen to some edits that I hadn't been involved in, which, you know, I jealously want to do all the work, but I can't do all the work. So it does give me a little bit of joy to be able to also then listen to edits. I don't know what's happening before for any of it, right? I just wait until I get an edit.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then
sometimes
I discover something. So
it's,
like,
it's interesting. Sometimes you, like, yours is the first audience reaction because the performers will generally know what's going on. Alex knows. And then you're getting, you'll be like, oh, so this happened, didn't it? I'm like,
I remember 160, I was like, Johnny,
how dare you?
I have to tell all my friends to listen to this the moment it drops because it's like, yeah. My brother is still like, why don't you just end at season 4? Because he was like, it's the perfect ending. This is how horror should end.
I'll be honest, there is like, that was something we did consider.
It.
But at the same time, I'm really interested in what happens afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. No, so am I. Yeah. So yeah, normally I just listen to it as it comes in. Although obviously for a script like this, with so many scenes, you have to read it and understand what's going on. You can't just, like with the statements, you can just start playing it and editing it. But it was pretty intense. And I just went at it. And then normally what I do is if there's little sections of things where I don't know, because I'm not doing the soundscaping, I have to assume that Alex will need some more time in spots to allow for the soundscaping, and also like pulling out little bits that you might want to reuse or because you're not happy with.
Fabulous habit to have.
The one that I've chosen. So that's kind of how I approached it. But it was a big edit. I think overall it took me like 25 hours.
Wow.
I think it's worth saying, since you've been doing vocal cuts, or at least as long as I can remember you've been doing vocal cuts, I haven't actually had to go back to raw, which is quite rare. So normally in mastering, Because of the tight turnarounds and something, what will happen is that we'll have the vocal cut and then we'll add in the soundscape and then we'll add in the music over the top. And then mastering, you kind of make sure that all levels are correct, and I'll be like, damn it, that was a good vocal cut, but I need to swap that out because of this other thing. I don't actually think I've ever had to go back to raw with the vocal cut that you've done, now I think about it, which is really rare. But it's because you provide those options.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That so makes a massive, enormous difference for me.
Exactly. So if there's been multiple screams, I will edit those really so that he can just go, okay, actually, I didn't like that scream that she, you know, that Elizabeth picked, or I need to, it's not working for some other reason because of the actual soundscaping.
I like your notes that come with them. So it'd be like, I've included this scream because I think the timing's right. Frankly, I prefer Demented 3, but apparently Demented 3 is probably not going to work with the timing. So I'm including it just in case. But if you can fit in Demented 3 or maybe Apocalypse 5, that's a good one too. Like, I just like the little notes that you get.
That's like we always say, Elizabeth is the best. Yeah. Unless you're another podcast company listening to this, in which case Elizabeth is awful.
Oh, she's a nightmare to work with.
I mean, I wouldn't even approach her. No. Just
problems.
So, were there any other challenges that come with the very piecemeal nature of this episode and so many casts being involved?
I think that, you know, as mentioned, the big thing is actually, so it will take longer to edit because you need to go through just more footage, so to speak. And then whether or not the energy is right between the actors. I think it's mostly covered. It's just that energy. It will take longer because you're having to go through more folders. I don't think I've got much more to add.
Unfortunately, there's not really any shortcuts you can say. And then we did this shortcut because we already take all of the shortcuts. We make a lot of stuff. Like, there's not really...
There's no more shortcuts we can make without massively compromising quality.
Oh, it'd literally just be cutting scenes. Yeah. Like, at that point, it'd be like, cool, scenes 3 and 6 aren't happening. Sorry.
There were a few ones where we were like, look, this scene... We could drop it. It will make the story worse. It will make the episode worse. But if we literally cannot do this scene, it would function without it. We can drop
it. Good example. Basira and Daisy are in 3 scenes in 158. The recording in scene 2 originally had Daisy saying a bunch of lines. That recording was one of the ones that broke. So as a result, we had to do an emergency rewrite and basically redo the scene in such a way that Daisy was listening to hear what was going on. And we needed a shh. So technically that counts as another appearance by Hannah as someone else's
what
character.
What was Hannah the shh? I thought we managed to get a shh from...
It ended up being one of the Hannah shushes,
really?
I believe. I'm 90% certain it was one of the Hannah shushes. Yeah,
in your notes it was like, there's this scene, it's someone else doing Daisy's shush.
Yeah, yeah. Daisy's shush was actually...
It is all her breathing, though, I believe, because we have that big breath library.
I think it's
No, that's from there. Because I don't particularly use that.
You don't use the breath library?
I've got my own breath library.
Oh, okay, it's a personal use only.
Genuinely, the breath library is mostly for me. It's mostly for me. Yeah.
That was creepy. Yeah.
We collect breaths. Yes, okay.
I have animals on store. There's not many of them, though. He's not been on audio that much.
Not a big breather.
It's not a huge breather.
I'm not in studio very often.
Rarely breathes, rarely blinks. That's our animal.
And the times I've been in studio, I haven't been on mic.
No, not really.
Mm. Actually, when you've got less characters in, you can just grab a breath, right? If it's only one or two characters, you just grab it from earlier. It becomes problematic when you've got, like, four characters and you're like, okay, I need to change this up. But... you know, Alex has gone, everyone do a load of breaths. And you're like, Alex, it sounds like an orgy in this. Because you've gotten everyone to be like,
To have too many than too few.
Which was the scene when we were all shouting so much for so long that we all got dizzy because there wasn't enough oxygen in the room?
It was one of the last ones involving Mike.
Yeah.
That probably would have been back in The Unknowing.
I think it was, actually.
Yeah, I think that's when I
remember. Oh, no, it was when everyone was freaking out because The Unknowing happened and we did, like, five takes.
Too many gasps.
We did five takes or more of, like, The Unknowing starting to happen and everyone like, freaking out. And, yeah, by the end, we were like, we need to go outside. There's not enough oxygen in this room anymore.
Yeah. Coming towards the end of season three, there was a lot of breathing. Mm. A lot.
So, Alex, you were doing most of the soundscaping for season four. Were there any specific issues that the soundscaping for Mag 158 raised?
What happened in 158? Let's run through this.
Okay. You talked a little bit about the corridor sounds.
Everyone else, by the way, has done these things where they read the questions ahead of time, they prepared,
listened to the episodes on the way over.
I just went, nah.
The Not Sasha was released.
Yeah.
Okay, Not Sasha releasing. Let's go with that. The Not Sasha releasing was astonishingly easy because Eve's just on it. Eve's another one who can just do villain straight out the gate.
Yeah.
Eve's very much a one-take wonder where she'll do it and I'll be like, actually, it needs to be this. And she's like, oh, I didn't realise. Bang, and it's that. So Eve's lovely to work for that. I know the tunnels are okay because we have a lot of pre-made templates that we can bring in for, like, the reverbs and so on. So it's just, like, add that in. That's fine. Is Helen in 158? Helen's not. So the Helen Michael ones are annoying because you have to manually add a bunch of extra stuff in for the laughs and so on. That takes a while. So the initial scenes are fine. It's basically just everyone talking about stuff.
They find the tape.
We did do a redraft because originally it was in the original Daisy one.
Somebody, like, I was like...
stumbles in going, I have been shot in my head.
So that would have been one of the hunters, I guess.
It was marginally subtler than that, but not by much. It was a bit like, I'm going in full season finale mode.
I did take the opportunity to be like, no corpses stumble into the...
Because there was a lot of that background fighting with Trevor and
Julia.
So, yeah, you had a lot of those fight scenes going on. Because I think you in your notes, you were like, if you want to do the fight scenes, you can. And then I thought, no.
That's a very valid response. I would say, actually, here's an interesting challenge. Although we try to make it, like, very similitudinous and, you know, it all holds together and feels quite realistic, normally the violence is fine for me. I don't get affected by horror and I don't get affected by the sound of violence because it's hard to stay like, oh, that sounds like a hard break when a piece of celery has just gone mushed and you've seen the celery go mush, you know what I mean?
Also, you kill so many people.
I have a lot of people in my head daily, so at some point, why'd you care? But... I found it quite difficult doing the sounds of removed hunters and the fighting and so on. And I'm happy to, like, publicly say what it is, which is it felt, when I was editing, it had a certain school shootery vibe. And that's not me making light of it at all. I was editing it, and because we were going for... We haven't really done that kind of combat, you know, the quite modern with the gunfights. It's normally quite punchy and knifey, which isn't...
Much more London.
Honestly, it's not as loud as you think. And whereas, like, with that, it was the sound of all the disturbs and then gunshots and then distant people running and blah, blah, blah. It really hit that school shooter situation, active shooter situation. And I found that really difficult, which is unusual for me.
Yeah,
I normally,
like,
have that divide.
One where, like, writing it, I don't think I realised quite how much of that it would carry.
I was like, ooh, obviously we'll do, like, content warnings and things like that. But for that one, that's the first one where I've been like, really needs this.
Yeah,
really,
I remember you
really
briefing me before
this.
before it dropped on something like that.
Yeah, it's because it was muffled and so on. It worked in a way that I didn't like.
But I don't think that's in the script per se, that it's like them with guns.
You know, they do have guns in the... Like, because for all I'm like, oh, you know, it's not something I wanted to elicit. I did want it to drive home the monstrousness of the hunter mentality. Mm. The fact that it's like, yeah, no, these are people who attack civilians because they have decided that they are arbitrarily monstrous.
I was just going to say, though, but because they had to be distant as well, I think that also would limit you to things that make loud noises, right? Guns and bombs. Yeah. If
Absolutely.
They're just, like, beating the crap out of people, you're not going to hear that as a distance noise, right? So you have to make that kind of decision.
The other thing is that it's one of the strengths that audio has is when it's doing something that's, like, distant and overheard, audio works better because people are already paying attention. Yeah. People are normally listening. If you're in your car, 90% of this has been lost on you anyway. If you're listening with headphones, though, you can hear those things that you're not going to hear when you watch TV or film, and that's because not many people watch TV and film with headphones. I recommend that you do it and try it. It's a completely different experience because the sound is normally done full surround for everything that you're watching these days. Mm. It's just that you're not getting the experience because you're pumping it out through stereo speakers at the other end of the room.
Or your phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or your tablet.
That I was finding very tricky. The Panopticon was quite easy, with one caveat. So the Panopticon is just, it's a big echoey room. There's some fun effects in there. There is whispering at the lowest end that humans can discern via electric equipment. So maybe 50% of people won't even be able to hear it, like their ear can't pick it up. That's nice, so that's in there and it swells at certain points and blah, blah, blah. The footsteps, they're a nightmare. They're walking along metal grating. That takes ages, and the reason being, you can't just take the sound of one person doing a footstep and then reuse it, because what that sounds like is hopping. It doesn't work. So footstep, that took a bit of a while. It's like, oh, I've got to do this, and I've got to do each individual footstep. It's right up there with those bloody chains in the prison on Elias. I was like, oh, Elias has got to have chains, otherwise it's just weird. There are at least 80 separate chain cues per tiny little scene because I couldn't find an audio sample that was good to go, so I had to do it all manually.
I feel like you put in the chains.
You
because
did
I
that
was like,
to you.
I'm probably not going to put chains in there. It might be a bit much.
Footsteps aren't difficult; they're just time consuming. Chains are a
I did put handcuffs.
I made it full chains. Well. Bugger Elias. Chains it is.
Listeners who are early access patrons will know that we had problems come early release. So much so that it was delayed by about 19 hours, which is the longest delay that we've ever had on that, well, on the season at least.
I blame you. You said that I should sleep, and I was like, no. And then you were like, no, sleep. That added at least 5 hours.
Self-care. We insist on that. Mm-hmm. But what were the challenges of bringing that all together into the cohesive whole? Well, obviously, some of that we've talked about. But was it just a perfect storm situation that we ran into?
Also, he's a perfectionist.
Perfect storm situation combined with...
the fact he's a big perfectionist.
Two things that I'm going to...
That's not a bad thing, Johnny.
Two things that I'm going to share which I haven't before, which is number one, I have a personal preference, which is my secret shame that I don't like to talk about. I still master in Audacity, which is the free open source editing suite. It's not the best one out there, but the reason I like it is, you know, when people talk about like driving an old car and you can feel the engine in the wheel and blah, blah, blah. That's kind of how Audacity feels for me, because you can do anything in it, but you have to go all the way down to like core principles and build it up yourself. You can't just go, process this for me, click a button and it's done. But what that means is it teaches you a lot, but it gives you complete control. So that's why I like it. It cannot handle that many layers. 1.5.8 all in, I had to start using certain workarounds because it just crashes once you pass a measly 85 separate layers of audio, it just starts to break, which is nonsense. So the issue that I was running into towards the end is that in the nicest way, I had transcended beyond mundane editing equipment, Annal. That was the problem. You see, I needed to... neural interface was really the only way to get the nuance. No, it just kept breaking. So we had to do that. I had to do a few workarounds. And also, audio density is a problem in MP3, which is that you have to remember that we have... vocals, okay, cool. We then have music, okay, cool. Technically, within the music, there are subtle layers and alterations that get lost in the compression. And then on top of that, we have the soundscapes. Then on top of that, we have what we call incidental effects. So that is like someone picking something up, dropping footsteps or whatever, which isn't your ambiance and so on. Then you got your transitions on top of that, blah, blah, blah. Basically, the equipment couldn't really handle it. I have as good a laptop as you can really get for editing. And even if I swap across to other programs, Magnus occasionally breaks things. But part of that is because I am not leaning into the strengths of them. I'm not going, hey, could you please process this? I'm going, no, I will process it myself because I will do a better job. Automated process.
You do, but it also takes so long.
Yeah. And time that you didn't have because of the production issues we'd had earlier down the line as well. Yeah.
So honestly, 90% of the delay was literally the equipment started breaking. It's that simple. So we had to work around that. And that was one where it broke once and I was like, no, we can still hit this. It broke a second time. I went, there might be a minor delay. Then there was a third time where it lost like 2 hours work. And I save like once every 10 minutes because it didn't just lose 2 hours work. It's because it actively corrupted save files that I had. And I lost three separate save files that corrupted. And I was just like,
We had a meeting on the Wednesday evening and... By this point, Magnus 158 was about 4 hours late, I'd been running firefighting on social media too.
But I was just about okay at that stage. I was like, it's fine, it's coming any second.
And this is something that folks won't know. Alex told me it would be done by midnight. And then I said, okay, can you guarantee that? He was a bit umming and erring.
I believe the exact phrase was, as long as it doesn't break again, we'll be fine.
So I sent out a message and said, okay, and we'll build in a little bit of leeway. It should be here by the morning.
Yeah.
Didn't quite hit the morning because I did insist, or we all insisted, that Alex actually get some rest.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the fans were mostly happy to say that we were practicing self-care.
It was annoying for me because we would have met, despite everything, we would have met deadlines, even if it had broken once.
Mm.
But we had a bit of a catastrophic, like, software collapse.
Yeah, which is why it's like, it came out 11 a.m. the next morning, which not ideal, and we do apologise for, but sometimes the equipment just can't quite take what Johnny has written.
And in Audacity's defence, before everyone says I brought this on myself, I did attempt to work in a different suite. That suite collapsed faster. So who's laughing now?
Nobody. I mean, we're all very sad.
But also it's like, you know, so we're doing 40 episodes generally in 1 year, so that's 12 weeks off. There's going to be sometimes a ball that's
it does build up as well, you know.
Mm. I mean, coming up to my holiday, I was like, Alex, you realise I'm going on holiday. I'm highlighting this to you months in advance.
You going away, Alex having his wedding, and then August. Perfect storm of events just happened.
And also, of course, this isn't happening in isolation.
No.
We're recording the rest of the season.
Yeah, because 159 and 160.
There are other podcasts to be run.
Are there some other shows? I want to say there are other shows.
That we're...
How dare you.
Okay, so let's bring this all. Each of you, what would you say was your highlight of actually working on Mag 150 or on the finished product?
When it was finished.
Alex Swiftly in there.
I enjoyed the big recording where we were all shouting and going, there's some violence occurring. That was fun.
I enjoyed the feeling when it was done.
Yeah, it was done is a legitimate response to that question.
I mean, actually, having everyone in the same room, I think for that big scene with six people, having them all, or was it five, all in the same room, that was a nice feeling. And re-listening to it on the way here, actually.
Mm. I don't re-listen to anything ever that we make unless I literally have to. Mm. It's weird to me.
No, it's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, being involved in such a big project, it's always nice when you deliver something and it feels really good. But to be honest, the real highlight for me was hearing Martin disappear.
That was satisfying, right?
It was. I mean, we all love Martin.
No! He needed booting into oblivion for a while. He needed a timeout, okay?
You know, like, for me, I have to have a villain for why am I doing this in my hours. I'm like, it's always Alex. Yeah, so then Martin gets that, because Martin's the proxy for Alex, right? So you've equipped
him. Hating Martin's great, especially when he doesn't deserve it.
Interesting. Interesting. So from a psychological point of view...
Me, myself, and Martin,
You find that you are... placing a lot of your own criticisms of yourself onto Martin and externalising...
Martin will always be someone that I've already progressed beyond, so it's okay for me to think less of him.
Interesting. How does that make you feel?
Wonderful. Very satisfying.
I always like the moments when I get the audio files and, you know, you're coming to record, particularly maybe season 2, season 3, but it's like just before you start to go into Martin, you're like, sound pathetic. Zen pathetic. Zen pathetic.
Shrill, and we'll begin.
Well, I think we'll draw a line under that.
I have an ally in Elizabeth.
Anil can just hear all the work he's going to have to do on the Discord when this drops.
A thousand voices cried out.
He doesn't really hate Martin. It's...
And before we have to spend an exorbitant amount on therapy bills, I think we will draw this episode to a close. Thank you very much for joining
us. Oh, no, we've got to ask you, Anil. What was your favourite part?
What was your favourite part?
Was it midnight on the day of release? I bet it was.
Actually, I will say that firefighting and keeping people informed was not my favourite task of just having to get running updates from you.
I've been giving you
on that.
Unfortunate jobs there.
Yeah. But in terms of what was my favourite, actually seeing the fan reaction for how much effort had gone into it. Because I was getting the running update of the difficulties behind the episode, actually seeing the finished product and seeing everybody's amazing reactions to how dense it was, how much plot there was, how much emotion went into that episode. And I think it came out fantastically and it also helped be a cap on, well, not so much a cap because 160 is the real cap, but in terms of an emotional high, for going into The Lonely on 159 and then The End of the World on 160, for everything that had come to date, because we were getting a few complaints about, well, not complaints per se, but we were getting a few comments about how the beginning of season 4 was running a little slow.
It
was a slow build-up.
Well, it's a weird one, because actually if you look at the amount of plot that happens and the amount of stuff that happens in season 4, it's actually almost... it's like twice as dense as season 3. Yeah. Like, there's loads of actual plot stuff happening all the time. It's just that because emotionally, it's dealing with loneliness and isolation and, like, these very quite low energy but intense emotions, it feels slow. It feels like, you know, if you actually, like, map out the plot points, it's just boom, 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 boom. But...
But then 150 to the end is a massive ramp up in terms of feeling. Okay, so yeah, the fan reaction is basically my highlight. So, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have found this somewhat enlightening.
Such tangential.
We will see.
This has been very useful for me, actually.
To
have an insight into exactly what you do so that I can hopefully make your lives easier.
We are a coordinated company, honest.
Yeah, but we haven't had such an in-depth discussion about one episode before, so it's been great for me.
Sorry, Alex, who is this?
A figment of your imagination. No.
Don't do that. That's not funny for anyone listening or me, so just stop.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
This episode is distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit rustyquill.com. Tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Na, noch keine Pläne fürs Wochenende? Besucht die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt in Freiburg mit euren Mädels, der Oma oder dem Knallertypen von nebenan. Wir lieben alle Jahrgänge. Entdeckt unsere interaktive Ausstellung bei der Erlebnistour mit Audioguide und einem Glas Sekt und genießt im Pavillon die ganze Welt von Rotkäppchen. Die Rotkäppchen-Erlebniswelt, nur eine Sektlänge entfernt.
Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice in the Magnus Protocol, and I'm here to tell you about From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an upcoming novel available for pre-order right now at rustyquill.com/novel. Return to the world of the Magnus Archives in From the Library of Jürgen Leitner, an official prequel novel written by Nebula, World Fantasy and Aurora award-winning author Premi Mohammed, with the help of the Magnus Archives' own writer and lead voice, Jonathan Sims. From the Library of Jürgen Leitner explores an infamous organization from the Magnusverse for the first time, the perilous private library of the enigmatic collector Jürgen Leitner, where occult books are guarded and researched at a fatal cost. Leitner's library keeps the dangers of these books in check and the would-be readers safe, or so Leitner claims. For two of Leitner's employees, the risks are worth it. For Hugh Franklin, the library is a place to belong. For Sebastian Everett, the library is an opportunity to indulge arcane ambitions. Though their 10 years at the library were years apart, Hugh and Sebastian's stories unfold in parallel, and their footsteps echo down the same eerie aisles, caught in a web spun long before either ever heard the name Jürgen Leitner. Will they find a way out, or will the library consume them before it's too late? From the Library of Jürgen Leitner will be published on October 27th, 2026, and is available for pre-order now. Visit rustyquill.com/novel for more information. That's rustyquill.com/NOVEL.